What is the infinite banking concept and how can you use it to help grow your wealth? This week, we sit down with Richard Canfield and we explore the infinite banking concept. Because this episode did run a little longer than usual, we are going to separate it into two separate podcasts. The first one comes out this week. The next part of this episode, the next part of this interview is going to be aired next week. Hope you enjoy.
This is the Saskatchewan Real Estate Podcast, the show that highlights Saskatchewan real estate. Looking to buy your first house, your next investment property? Subscribe to never miss an episode. Here's your host, Ron Caroni.
Hello and welcome back to the Saskatchewan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ron Caroni. Here on the Saskatchewan Real Estate Podcast, we love to touch on all things Saskatchewan real estate and sometimes some financial advice. If you're looking for more information like this, every single week on Monday, we air a brand new episode. So if you're looking for more content like this, please hit the subscribe button. Today, I am really looking forward to this conversation. Usually, I try and have a pretty good understanding of what we're talking about before we go into an interview. But admittedly, today, I'm going to be a little underhanded. Today, I have Richard Canfield, an Amazon bestselling author and host of the Wealth Without Bay Street podcast. And Richard, today, you're going to touch on a topic called infinite banking. First on, welcome to the podcast. And thanks so much for coming out today.
Awesome. Happy to be with you here, Ron. I'm excited about this and hopefully adding some value to all your listeners, of course, the good people of Saskatchewan. And it's an interesting and I think really convenient time that we've had this scheduled here today because we're in the week of massive bank failures taking place and making yes. all the headlines all over the United States. And I would say, at least for the people I'm speaking with and the communications I'm seeing, maybe you have some similar to this. There seems to be a lot of market concern and a little bit of, I think it's kind of like to a degree, it's taken people's breath away. A lot of people expected it to happen. They kind of knew something was going to happen. Other people are on the other side of the fence and they're like, oh my God, what is happening? Is it going to come to Canada? And all these types of fears and things that happen when you have these big bold headlines and market announcement, it creates a lot of fear in the population. And so right. I think, you know, part of what we're going to talk about today is going to hopefully to some degree might help, you know, alleviate a bit of those fears and just give people some context on what they can do at the you and me level to be able to separate themselves a little bit from that system, the volatility of that system and the shenanigans of mismanagement, which are very prevalent in, let's just call it the banking industry, the financial industry. I don't think we have to go very far back in time. Oh, I don't know, 15 years to 2008, where we can look back at some very recent occurrences of financial shenanigans that caused, oh, I don't know, global unrest and a little bit of financial turmoil. And so we as Canadians, I think we really need to be focused on being mindful about what's going on in the world, how other large economies have an impact on what happens here. See, the system is all connected. We've really always known that, but we didn't really see it truly come to the level of understanding until the financial collapse of 2008. You had people with their RRSPs and their TFSAs and all their investments, and suddenly their markets were crashing 25, 30, 40, 50% for a lot of people's retirement accounts. That's because everything was interconnected. You know, so some bank in the United States that packaged a bunch of bad mortgages and sold it as, you know, a credit default swap to some other bank, to some other institution in Europe. And the end result is everything's all interconnected and it ties into the funds that you have your money invested in here. And we still felt the brunt of it, even though we didn't cause the problem, if that makes sense.
Right. So, before we go too much farther, Richard, give us a little background on yourself. What do you specifically do as a job and kind of give us a context of how you're, what do you do day to day?
Yeah, thanks for that. So, I mean, what we do at Ascendant Financial and at the Wealth Without Bay Street podcast is we help try to find ways to educate the Canadian consumer, and now we're actually breaking into the United States as well and helping people down there to really understand how they can have more control and autonomy over their own money. The world that we live in has spent a long time trying to market everyone to give up their money, give up control, give up their deposits, give up their investments, put it with someone else and abdicate the responsibility of that money and have someone else look after it to some degree, park it someplace else. Our whole goal is to help educate people to understand how they can have that control back in a very simple format at their own level and really focus on the optimization of cash flow. That's money that flows. It's flowing through your life. Money comes in, money goes out. Money comes in, money goes out. When it's going out, the mortgage guy gets paid, the credit card guy gets paid, you know, the vehicle payment guy gets paid, the tax man gets paid. Everyone else seems to get paid, and the person only gets paid what's left. So we want to try to help people understand they can capture some of that flow of money before it goes out the door to harness its good earning potential to operate for their lifespan and then be able to cascade that actually over multiple generations. So that's part of what we do. And all of it comes from, you mentioned at the beginning here, Ron, it all comes from this incredible book for anyone watching on YouTube. It's Becoming Your Own Banker is the name of the book, Unlock the Infinite Banking Concept. Do you mind if I share a quick story about this book?
Totally. Actually, before you do, can you just explain what is infinite banking so we can give the context for what we're chatting about?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, banking is something that we all do on a day-to-day basis. Banking has to do with the flow of money. It's a transactional nature. Money's got to go from one party to another in a short period of time. That's the nature of banking. Does that make sense? So when we want to become our own banker, we want to take control as it relates to our needs, our need for large purchases, big things that we're going to purchase, investments we're going to make over our lifespan. We want to take control over that process so that we can have more, not only more control, but more financial advantage in doing so. So to do that, we utilize a tool. So I'll give you an example. You've probably maybe seen a chainsaw before.
Have seen a chainsaw. Can confirm.
Okay. Can confirm. Ever used one before?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm a big fan of chainsaw. I think they're just fun to use. Let's be honest. But if you fire up a chainsaw, you know, you got the right fuel mix, you got the oil in there, the chain's sharpened, ready to go. You fire that thing up, you know, you rev it a couple times because it's got that beautiful sound that it makes. And then you just randomly hand it to the guy or the gal that's walking by on the street who's never seen a chainsaw before. What's the probability that they could seriously injure themselves? Low, medium, or high?
We'll go low, medium, depending. Yeah.
Okay. And then what's the probability that they could break the tool because they don't know anything about it or how to use it?
High.
Pretty high. So a tool is just a tool. It's how the user understands the usage of the tool that always matters. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we implement a type of whole life insurance vehicle that builds and creates equity. So it's called cash value, which is no different than equity in the walls of your house. It's the same idea. The difference is the walls of your house can go up and they can go down. The value of the house. And those are relevant to market conditions that are outside of yours and my control. Would you agree?
Somewhat, yes.
For the most part.
Yeah.
When you look at these insurance contracts that we put up, they only have one direction, and that's up. They have no reverse gear. And in fact, we explain that in our most recent book called Cash Follows a Leader. So we talk about exactly how that process works. And in this book, we have a multi-generational case study of a client of mine based out of Edmonton, who's a husband and wife, and they have two daughters. They have these tools in place and they use them to build up a reservoir of capital for all their financing, purchasing needs, cars, paying their property taxes, their home and auto insurance, family vacations, all the things that we're spending money on anyway. They just do that differently than everyone else does now. They added something new into the same process. The result of that behavior is that they're going to have a really healthy passive income for 26 years tax-free. They're going to leave a big nest egg behind to their kids. And then their kids are also going to have a passive income well into their future, all created out of one planning arrangement based on changing the way they think about flow of money. So that's the power of what we're able to do when we incorporate this idea of the infinite banking concept. And I'll expand on that a little bit further, but the key way to understand this is to come back to the guy who wrote this book. His name is R. Nelson Nash. Nelson, rest his soul. He graduated, he would say, about 4 years ago. At the time of our recording here, we're coming up on the fourth anniversary of Nelson's passing. Nelson was 88 years old. He would say 88 revolutions around the sun. And he had a really interesting lifespan. I learned a great deal. He became my friend and my mentor. I loved him dearly. When I read this book in August of 2009, it completely changed my whole life. It changed the way I think about money, the way I think about even things like relationships. And the types of things that I learned from Nelson have shifted and have really infused into every aspect of my life to the core degree. There's there's not a single impact of my life that hasn't been positively, you know, shaped by getting to learn from that book and that man, if that makes any sense. And so what I learned in this book is that prior to receiving it, I'd spent about 40 some thousand dollars on my personal and financial education before I got this book. So, you know, like a little bit. I was pretty committed to growing myself.
That's a touch of money. Yes.
Yeah, touch of money. Not accounting for inflation, you know, because this is a, you know, a ways back. And a lot of that was in real estate courses and learning about different ways to earn money in real estate and that sort of thing. And so I learned great things. I met a lot of great people. It was, you know, all good experiences. But for at the time, with the exchange rate, it was pretty nasty. It was $45 to get this to my door. We sell these books now for, I think, with shipping, about $30 Canadian. And when I received this book, I realized that I got a better financial education for $45 in 92 pages than I'd received from the 40 grand that I'd spent in the 8 to 9 years prior in my life.
Mm-hmm.
What would that tell you? That's a big deal, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah.
So I understood that there's things that we don't know, and we don't know what we don't know until we have an opportunity to learn and discover it. And then it shapes the way that we think about the future. And so ultimately, how we help people is all centered and cored around what Nelson put together in this amazing 92-page book.
Let's start from the very beginning, soup to nuts. If I was approaching you and I said I wanted to explore the infinite banking concept with you, so we set up a whole life policy. Do I have to have a lot of money at the beginning? What does it look like for me to begin this process? And what are my, at the very beginning, what are my access to capital? And what does that look like, Richard?
Super good question. So I'm going to actually back it up a little bit further than that. So if someone's actually interested in getting started, the first step is in a pretty good amount of education. There's no getting started until you know what you're getting started for. Mm. So, you know, we generally, at least myself personally, I only work with people who have purchased and read Nelson's book. If you haven't done that, there's no point in getting started, because if you don't know the groundwork and the foundation, you don't want to build a house on a bad foundation.
Sure.
So if you're going to build something that's going to be sustainable and last a long time, you need to have the right foundation in place, plain and simple. I asked people to watch the documentary film that we made on Nelson's life. You can go to nelsonnashfilm.com and you can watch it. It's only 1 hour long. That will help you understand more about the context of how this was created. This idea was born ultimately in the early 80s when interest rates spike. Nelson was big in real estate development. And he had a huge, you know, $500,000 open line of credit in 1981. Well, when interest rates went up to 21%, well, he was paying prime plus one, you know, plus 1.5. So it was 23.5% interest. So just think about that for a moment. Imagine you got a $500,000 HELOC at 23.5% interest. That could be financially crippling for a lot of people. Would you agree?
Oh, I totally agree.
Totally agree. Then additionally, he had another development with he was in land development with several partners. One of them was one of the biggest lawyers in the town of Birmingham, Alabama. That guy went bankrupt on him. Nelson had to eat his share of the guy's deal. That was another $300,000. So imagine owing 800 grand over 20% interest in one of the worst economic climates that we can remember in as long as I've been alive. And understand the impact that can have on people. So it was actually through a lot of prayer where Nelson realized, hey, like, how am I going to get out of this mess that I've created for myself? And he realized the solution was there already. The difference was he hadn't been putting enough deposits into the insurance solution that already existed in his life. He realized that he could get out of this mess and buy back this debt that was owed to the third parties. He called them the snakes and dragons, without having to ask them permission, by using insurance contracts he had in place. The issue was he could only get access to what he put in there. So he hadn't been putting enough in. So he realized if he can make that change and he could reallocate how money was flowing through his life, he could ramp up that system and he could get rid of those snakes and dragons. It took him 13 years to fire his bankers. After that point in time, him and his wife never saw a traditional bank as you and I know it again for the rest of his natural life.
Mm-hmm.
His kids and his family, all the way down to his great-grandchildren that he has, they implemented this system. And now they finance all their cars through the family. They finance mortgages and houses through the family. The money stays in an aquarium. It doesn't leave the family. So all that financial energy that usually disappears, all stays within an ecosystem of control. Now, when Nelson passed away in 4 years ago, when he passed away, there were 17 death benefit checks paid tax-free. It's a pretty good chunk of money. But what's more interesting than that isn't the 17 death benefit checks. It's that there were 28 assets. Think of it like 28 houses that were still in place, that were free and clear, fully paid for, that were growing and accumulating every day, that passed tax-free without capital gains to the remaining members of the family.
Hmm.
So 17 houses sold tax-free. They got all the money without paying tax. 28 assets passed tax-free that are still earning and creating cash flow, and they have complete access to all the capital still in force today that he created in his lifetime. That's the kind of power we can create when we understand the longevity of money flowing through our life, if that makes sense. So going back to your question, how do you get started? It starts with education. Then once a person decides that, yes, this is something they want to do, they would meet with a coach on our team, an authorized infinite banking practitioner. They would go through some financial, you know, we're licensed in the environment. You need to go through some financial stuff to understand how you're put together, how you're structured. Once that's complete, the individual, you would decide how much you want to put into your system. We don't decide that. You decide that. It's your money. It's your system. We help build and construct it based on those variables. Yeah, we provide some guidance, of course, don't get me wrong, but you're the one making the decision because it's your money. We put it into a program. Think of it as a long-term buy and hold piece of real estate. But as you put money in, there's immediate liquidity to a chunk of that money that you can start putting back to work in your life instantly. Like, I'll give you an example one. Do you mind if I give you an example one?
Sure.
I set up another contract. I wanted to grow the size of my system. So I have a number of policies. Many are on my life. I have two children. I have four policies for my, you know, and combined for my children. I just funded premium on one yesterday. So I'm excited about that. I started one for my wife about a year ago, and I made the decision on what it was for. So in my corporation, I have to pay, would you imagine? I have to pay corporate taxes, hey? Like CRA.
Oh, the audacity. Yes.
No sense of humor about it at all. They won't accept like whatever else I want to send them. They want Canadian currency. So if I got to pay them anyway, I said, look, I'm going to take the money that I've been setting aside for the purpose of paying that bill, and I'm going to create a new machine to capture and harness the power of that tax bill before it walks out the door. Does that make sense? So I made the decision. I wanted to start a plan that was I could put as much as $35,000 into it. Does that make sense? Okay. That was my call, my decision. The minimum requirement is it's less than 10, but just to keep everything simple, let's just say it's $10,000. All right. So 10,000 is the required amount. 35 is what I can put in, which means 25 is completely and totally flexible. I control when and how and if I make that contribution. Make sense? Okay. So a ton of flexibility. Now, the moment after, it was roughly a week after I sent that 35 in and the policy was approved, I immediately borrowed about $22,000 out of it. And I used that to go pay the Canadian tax man. Now, I owed them more money.
Because you're borrowing the money, it becomes a tax write-off. Is that what I'm assuming?
So great, great question. It's not because I'm borrowing it, but just like in a piece of real estate, you can use like a HELOC and you can borrow against the HELOC. Well, you can borrow against the insurance policy as collateral. The difference is instead of going to and making application and getting approval from a traditional bank, I have contractual authority to access whatever can be lent from my equity in the insurance contract with no questions asked with one piece of paper. In fact, now you can do it online and that money gets direct deposit to my account. So I'm receiving the money from the insurance company, which I co-own. I'm now a co-owner of the company. So I co-own the lender and I have total control over the repayment terms. If I don't send anything back, they don't send a white van outside my house with an insurance company logo and some guys with baseball bats come out and say, hey buddy, where's our payments? None of that happens. I control the complete terms and conditions of the repayment. It's called an unstructured loan. Unstructured means there's no structure to it. I'm totally in the driver's seat. Does that make sense? Now, when I borrowed that money and I sent the payment to CRA, I owed them more than that. So I had extra money in my corporation to make up the difference. But the total value of what I was going to send them, I captured the potential of that $35,000 for the rest of my wife's natural life. And in the process, I created a huge amount of tax-free death benefit protecting her family, which I needed to do anyway. Because if something happens to my wife, boy, I'm going to have a real tough time trying to figure out how she's been taking care of the kids while I'm doing this. Right. I'm going to have a lot of work and energy in front of me to try to sort that out. So I need capital to solve that problem. So we're solving multiple problems by implementing a new strategy and changing the way the money flows. So now I'm just going to repeat that process every year. And I've already repaid the outstanding loan and I've put the money back in, which means next year I can access the money to do it again. Does that make sense?
Kind of. What when you say unstructured loan, so who is determining or what is determining the interest that you're pulling that money out at? Is it set at something like a prime plus? Is it set at something that you determine that the insurance company does? Can you expand on that a little, Richard?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So the insurance company has to put money to work for the benefit of everyone that owns the company. Does that make sense? So when we get one of these contracts for the purpose of the infinite banking concept to implement that in your life, what we're getting is what's called a dividend paying participating whole life contract. The word participating is important because what you're doing is you are now an owner in the company and you participate in the profitability of the company. So you're entitled to receive a share of the divisible surplus each and every year. Sound good? Okay. So because you're a co-owner in the company, you're kind of like the VIP or top of the food chain when it comes to the insurance realm. So when you take a policy loan, the insurance company sets that rate, and those rates do change from time to time, no different than rates in the open marketplace do. Most companies set it roughly one time per year. And unlike a typical loan, when you take a typical loan, you need to apply, do all the paperwork and all the Mickey Mouse stuff. And then it affects your credit report. None of that happens here because the loan is private with the life insurance company that you co-own. It's a contractual right to be able to access that money. Okay. So the interest rate does vary. Like as an example, there's one today that I work with that I do most of my business with. It's at 6.2%. Well, with interest rates rising, could it go up a little bit? Yeah, it probably could. But they charge me a simple interest that only adds to the loan value one time per year. So if I borrowed $10,000 and I went 365 days, the amount that I would owe the life company is $10,000 plus $620. We agree?
Okay. As opposed to semi-annually on a mortgage or monthly.
Monthly on most other ones. Exactly. So if I send no payments back, then that loan rolling into the next year is down $10,620. Okay. But I could do that and not send any payments back. That would be silly. We wouldn't recommend that. But I have the ability to make that choice as a policy owner. The insurance company cannot force me to make any payments. All right. So the lien on that, the loan that I've taken, the cash value is used as collateral, but the lien is actually placed on the death benefit. So if somebody dies, then the death benefit pays out tax-free and the loan plus any interest gets recovered by the life company first. It has to come back to the money pool. Because everyone that's in that pool is expecting the insurance company to put the money to work for the benefit of everyone in the pool. It's kind of like a co-op, if you think of it that way. And so the reason they need to charge interest is because they have to put the money to work for all parties. So they're putting it on, you know, different investments and things that they do, a lot of real estate. They lend them a lot of money on mortgages, et cetera. Because they have to put the money to work anywhere or any way, the food chain, the top of the food chain of who can get the money is the policy owner. We have the first right to access whatever is available to be lent on our own equity. Okay. Mm-hmm. So a way to look at this is kind of like you're taking an advance, like a credit card advance on whoever the life insurance future death is. So you're able to actually utilize the death benefit, its present value in the world today, not waiting for it when you're dead. See, the word life insurance, people tend to think it's only good when I'm dead. Well, that's because you're not using the right stuff. When we use it, it's called life insurance for a reason, because you use it while you're alive. It's for living, not for dying.
So just a few more quick clarifications. We're running out a little bit of time here, Richard, but the one is the money that you have access to, is it the money that you put into the life insurance policy, or is there access to greater funds beyond what you're paying into your specific policy?
Yeah, great question. So at the beginning, again, I use a real estate example here. When you buy a piece of real estate, you have to put up the down payment. You got to come up with a boatload of money, and then someone else brings in the rest of the money, a bank. Make sense? So in the first number of years of owning a piece of real estate in general, you don't have access to that down payment. It might take you probably on the low end 3 years, unless you're like a flipper of some kind, but generally you're waiting 5, maybe even 7 years before you could tap into the original down payment money of that property in a general long-term buy and hold scenario. Does that sound about fair?
Yes.
So you're putting up the money that you had to save and build and save and build and save and build. You drop it into the house. It's stuck in the walls of the house. You can't liberate what you put in for a number of years, either through equity appreciation or mortgage.
Depending on your down payment and yeah.
Correct. So in the insurance realm, you have access to a large amount of what you put in when it's structured the correct way. And then each and every year it gets better and better. It becomes more and more efficient. So typically you have access to everything you've contributed. Again, it varies by age and a variety of factors. If it's a little policy versus a big policy, there's some scale it's created. You know, typically within a 5 to 7 year time frame, you have access to every dollar, but you have access to large components of those dollars as you're going. What's really interesting is this: as you put money in, you put premium deposits in to the insurance company. The way that we design these, it only takes a couple of years before every time you put a dollar in, you're getting $1.05 back. You put a dollar in the next year, you're getting $1.07. You put a dollar in the next year, you're getting $1.10. So just imagine you had a bank account, and every time you put a dollar in, at the end of the year, you could access all of those dollars plus friends. Okay. So it becomes like an ever increasing future operating line of credit to be able to utilize at will for all of life's needs, the things mm-hmm. you're already spending money on. You want to go put money into an investment. You want to go buy a rental property. Boom. You access capital here. Instead of accessing it from your regular savings and or equity in another house, you can access it from equity in the insurance contract, and you can create the exact same outcome. But you're also protected, and your family's protected in the whole situation now, because you have highly appropriate capital accumulation based on the accumulation of the death benefit. So to answer your question, there's more to it than meets the eye. You're not just getting your money back. Your money is getting insurance, but the insurance is creating money for the purpose of paying the eventual death benefit. So really what you're accessing is you're accessing today's present value of a future cash flow. So every day that the policy's in force, it accumulates more and more and more. So I went to bed last night and I woke up. We're doing this recording early in the morning. There's more cash in all my system of policies than there was when I went to bed last night. Every single day it goes, because I'm still here. I'm still breathing. I'm still alive. Therefore, all those policies have to produce more financial outcome, because they're growing and chasing after the eventual death benefit. That's actually the fundamental basis of our book, Cash Follows the Leader. It's a nice, simple read. We walk through the mechanics of how the contract works to really, truly understand. And we have some visual diagrams in there that are really helpful, that the power of this really is in accelerating how the insurance contract itself grows, forces cash to accumulate at an ever-increasing basis. So unlike the markets that have an ebb and a flow to them, we're creating a contractual requirement, placing the insurance company on notice that says, hey, I just forced the contract to be better the next day based on my actions, not yours. So you really have autonomy and control in the utilization of this concept. At the end of the day, what it boils down to is someone's going to control the flow of your money. You have to deposit money somewhere, and you have to borrow money somewhere. Usually we're doing it with an entity what we don't own and control. Well, you can save and accumulate capital and borrow capital from an entity you co-own with no restrictions. You're already doing this process. Which one would you rather do your business with? And going back to what we talked about with the Silicon Valley Bank kind of failure thing happening here, that's all based on a system of trust where the money is not the money and deposits that you need in the regular banking system aren't actually there. In the insurance company world, they cannot inflate the money supply. They can't manufacture money that doesn't exist. So there's a substantially greater level of protection on the overall capital when you build it in this format, compared to the shenanigans that we're seeing taking place presently in the current climate, and really kind of echoes from what happened in the 2008 financial crisis.
Hey guys, thanks for checking out this episode of the Saskatchewan Real Estate Podcast. I hope you found some value here. And if you did like what you were hearing, make sure to hit the like button. And to never miss an episode, subscribe. We air weekly episodes just for you. If you are in the Saskatchewan market and you are looking for a purchase, a renewal, or refinance of a mortgage, I'm more than happy to answer any of your questions. My details can be found in the links or descriptions of this video or audio podcast. Until next week, my name is Ron Caroni, your Saskatchewan mortgage professional. Bye for now.